That was my Danish impression. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into This Week in Mormons. Nice to have you.
Hello, everyone. I represent
the Lollipop Guild.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yes. Opcha.
I like that, Jeff. I think you should. That should be your thing. That's your tagline. Opensha.
Oh, I've been doing it. I just don't do it around you. My wife is well aware of it.
Oh, is she?
Oh, she is. She's heard it.
In the bedroom? Opensha.
That is inappropriate.
That was great, though. That's witty. I feel like that would be the perfect example for where to use it.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough to the duet, whatever. Anyway, this is kind of strange. I have not had to do a show on the road like this before. I've done
Ever.
Shows on the road.
Ever.
I've done shows on the road, but not
you
in
remember,
this drastic of a setting.
Do you remember when we did a show in New York and we were facing each other in the same room? We had all that weird feedback and it was an awful recording.
Yeah, because we weren't using good equipment. We were both using individual microphones that just gave echo.
It was awful.
It was really fun to edit. I'm glad I had a train ride home to do it on. It was exciting. Yeah, anyway, so I come to you from Svendborg, Denmark.
Oh, how is it there, Jeff?
Now,
the
course,
women are lovely and the bikes go fast.
They're everywhere. Well, Svendborg I'm about 2 hours from Copenhagen. I'm actually much closer to the third largest city in Denmark, Odense.
The city that no one has ever heard of.
Excuse me, Hans Christian Andersen is from Odense.
Yeah, why is his statue in Copenhagen?
Well, no, you mean the statue of the Little Mermaid, that pointless thing?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, that's the one. No.
This anyway. Pointless thing? No, it was beheaded a number of times.
Well, it was pointless. I haven't actually seen it yet. So I was in Copenhagen for a day over on Sunday last. So I saw some of the city, did some things, you know. I thought of my buddy Al while I walked around.
Because we've both been there.
Yeah. And whenever I go somewhere that I know you have also been, I think about you.
I'm like, there's vestiges of me everywhere throughout the
city.
Yeah.
So when I go to the brothels in Nevada.
This guy. I love this guy.
Opensha.
I feel really proud of you right now. I feel like that's a very witty thing to be doing.
Thank you.
it's the last name as an exclamation point.
Yeah,
it's sort of a Mike Birbiglia thing, but more high schoolish.
I think I'm stealing it more from Pete Hornberger on 30 Rock. We'll go Hornberger. Maybe that's where I'm getting it from.
I need to watch the last three seasons of that.
Yeah, you know, it ended well. I enjoyed it. My wifey has recently gotten into Parks and Rec.
Oh, I love Parks and Rec.
Finally. So much that in my absence, she's apparently gotten all the way through season 4.
Good for her. What a sweetheart.
Yeah. So, I know, we have a good time watching. In irony, not really irony, but, you know, Hugo Chavez died. I'm sure you saw that, right?
Speaking of Parks and Rec,
this comes back around.
In irony, Hugo Chavez died. Yeah,
it was just last week that we saw that one episode in season 2 when Fred Armisen's on the show, and it's like the delegation from Venezuela. Remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
And they try to get Leslie to say "Viva Chavez" many times over. So
I do remember that.
That's all. So I thought of that because yesterday Hugo Chavez died, and because the internet was down in my hotel, I've been doing nothing but watching CNN International for like 4 hours on repeat.
How is that 24-hour news cycle?
You know, you really realize the word cycle truly does apply after so long.
Yep.
I can only watch the news about Justin Bieber's 2-hour delayed concert in London, you know, so many times.
How does that make you feel?
Well, disappointed, mostly for the fans. And the parents.
Yeah, the parents really had a hard time, huh?
They did, actually. They booed him. There was booing.
They were angry. They were angry at him.
It was a school night. This is serious, Al. It's the Biebs.
I don't know anything about school or night.
I know. You were night schooled.
Well, I was thinking of Night Court. I was going to make a witty reference to Bull, but it didn't make it.
I would appreciate a witty reference to Bull. Please do. Please do one.
I wonder if Night Court's on Netflix. That would be a great one.
I don't know if it is, but the funny thing is I tried logging into Netflix here in Denmark, and I guess they do have it, which surprises me. But of course, the viewing options are different in a different country based on your IP address.
Right, you're only allowed to watch all their Copenhagen comedies.
No, the interesting thing is they actually seem to get a lot better big-time Hollywood movies.
No.
The ones we don't get in the States. Yeah, they've got like all these Harry Potter movies.
Are they all in Dutch?
No, they're the regular English. Well, actually, that's a very good question. But no, it's my desktop and everything is in English, so I'm assuming it's all in English still.
Yeah, let's not give Netflix too much credit.
So
you never know.
I learned this because I wanted to find Parks and Rec and catch up, but they don't have it.
C'est la vie.
And then I tried a proxy server.
So tell me, what have you seen in this new country? What great things have you done there?
Well, Denmark is very well. I've been out here for work, so my company is based out here in Svendborg, which is not a huge town or anything. There's not loads to do here. But Copenhagen was great. I'll be back there again this weekend to see it a little bit more before I fly back. And it's full of all sorts of, you know, wonderful stuff.
What's there to see in Svendborg? That's what
very,
I want to
know. Very, very little. Svendborg
is there a pastry shop or something?
There is. I went to one yesterday. It was delightful.
That's all you need?
It's got a very quaint and cute kind of old city center. The rest of it's just kind of whatever. It's on the southern coast, the southeastern coast of the island of Funen. And it is beautiful. We were out driving around yesterday for work, and I got to see lots of beautiful coastline.
Remember when I was in Denmark and I went into a pastry shop and asked for a Danish, and they looked at me like I was an idiot? Good times.
Don't.
Good times.
No.
Don't.
But anyways, there's not a ton here. I mean, I go out to dinner with the colleagues and stuff.
With the fellas.
And thankfully today, for the first time since I arrived, my hotel has restored Wi-Fi. So I am able to do this show with you. Because last night I walked a couple of kilometers to a McDonald's just so I could talk to my wife, finally. You know.
You know what? You know what's great about Wi-Fi after a few days without it? Even after traveling and you like plug in and emails come in and updates come in and everything's syncing and it's like new life is coming back into your veins. And you're like, how did I live? How did I live for so long without this? And then...
No.
What?
And then it's gone. It gives us a great appreciation. And here's a tip, travelers. If you're never sure if you can find Wi-Fi, almost anywhere in the world, find a McDonald's and you'll probably have free Wi-Fi.
They really do. They really, really do. Also, travelers... Go buy a $2 power strip from Dollar General. And then when you're in the airport and everybody's scrambling for that one, be the hero and plug in a power strip.
So that everyone can plug in?
That's right. You can take over any power strip you'd like if you have. Like any outlet is free game if you have a power strip. Because you're like, here, I'll plug you in and me. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
I would just plug in 7 devices of my own.
Just have it completely full. Pull out your mini microwave.
I mean, I've got a phone. I've got a tablet. I've got a laptop. Surely I could find a few other things to plug in.
Plug it all in, Jeff.
Charge my phone battery.
How was that flight? Like a 9-hour flight?
Ugh, I don't sleep well at all when I fly, so I was pretty much up the whole time. No, I was about 7 hours to Paris, and then I connected there and went to Copenhagen, which was about an hour and a half more, so...
I love it.
And that's the shorter trip, because flying westward always takes longer. So I'm really excited for Amsterdam to D.C.
Maybe you'll get upgraded to first class.
I won't.
You won't.
I don't have enough Delta medallion, whatever. But the upside is it's a work trip, and I flew on Air France and KLM, so at least I get the sky miles, right?
Sweet. Yeah, you do. There you go, buddy. There you go, buddy.
Thank you. I worked very hard to be here.
So...
But... enough about me and my adventures in Scandinavia with these marvelous people. I want to know how you're doing. Tell us about everything about the ladies, about work. Just tell us all out.
Well, I've been working the ladies. Just kidding.
Pity.
So let's see. No, you know what's been interesting? So I talked to our fellow friend, Bookstore Brian. You know him.
The one we've talked about having on the show for like 2 years.
Yeah. Yes, we love him. He's a very smart man.
Yes.
But I guess there was just a book released about Joseph Smith and polygamy that was like a fair view of it.
Okay.
That's been doing really, really well for them. And so I'm going to grab me a copy and read it. But they had a book signing with the author there the other day, and so they were telling me about that. It's just fascinating to get some review of that. What's that?
Oh, I was going to say, but I take it it's not fair enough that Deseret Book is carrying it, right?
Maybe not. Well, and so the issue, I mean, here's the thing the reality is that Joseph Smith did have, like, some polygamous relationships, right? Like, he had additional wives to Emma. Which isn't, I mean, so the thing that's hard though is that's not common knowledge, right? Like most people would be like, no, I don't think that's right. I'm not sure. Well, the revelation to institute this practice came to Joseph Smith, and then Brigham Young like magnified it while they were crossing the plains, and then it was removed, which was, I mean, this is all done in a very timely, like this book is coming out in a timely fashion because of the new heading to that manifesto and all that stuff. I mean, one of the key things that was removed from the manifesto was the comment that it was a unanimous vote, which it wasn't at the time. It wasn't a unanimous vote by the brethren. There were some that were opposed to, you know, doing away with it, but the majority took it. And so they removed some of that wording. I mean, it was just interesting to talk through some of the wording changes and stuff in the new revision to the scriptures that we had last week or the week before with this guy. I mean, pretty cool. Well, and so some of the things that he noticed, which I thought I'd toss out to you, Jeff, is like, so in the Doctrine and Covenants, the changes were more to allow for the fact that these are like third party accounts. And so in the headings, it used to say Joseph Smith said, and now it says it's reported that Joseph Smith said, or it was recorded that Joseph Smith said something to that effect, more to give the understanding that the exact wording. If you get hung up on an and or a thee or thine that's misplaced or that's in there that maybe looks weird or something, to just not, because these aren't, you know, it wasn't Joseph Smith writing down what he said, and it wasn't even anyone, well, very rarely is it even anyone that's like dictating what Joseph Smith said. It's rather, it's like accounts of people like piecing this back together after the fact, which understandably would be difficult. And so they're just like, there's some room for error, right?
Right. And it's, of course, speaking of, I mean, you know, you're aware of all the different changes that were made in the scriptures, of course.
That, I thought that's what we were talking about.
No, I know. But I just mean, if you want to talk about the other ones aside from.
So the other one that was,
we can go, there's many of them actually, but go ahead.
Well, I came back and was rereading some of the stuff that was going on with it, because when you and I talked about it, I mean, it all felt pretty basic, but there's a few that were really, really interesting. The other one in particular, which I know we touched on last time, but the heading to the blacks and the priesthood, right?
We haven't talked about this. This happened since last week's show.
This is on our, is this on our Trello?
Yeah, it's on the Trello.
It's on the Trello.
Yeah, but they changed the introduction to the official declarations. It's pretty interesting. You're right.
Well, so impressive or meaningful, at least, that they that there's even a heading now, right? Because forever it was just, this is it, and now they're trying to give a little bit of context. And the part that was interesting about this is the context given is Joseph Smith, you know, gave blacks the priesthood. There were notable members of the church that had the priesthood that were black. A couple of things that Brian brought up is he's like, you know, really there just wasn't a lot of blacks that were members of the church back then, and so it wasn't a big deal, right? There was a few, but black males that were a member of the church, it wasn't like there was a majority or even a large percentage, because if it were, this probably would have been a bigger deal.
Sure.
But instead, as they moved west, after Joseph Smith died, Brigham Young, well, so the heading says, and we don't know why this was taken away. We're not sure. I guess the reality is that we do kind of know why. I mean, that was the cultural expectancy or the culturally accepted thing to do. And as they migrated, they were just like, well, I guess, I mean, do we or don't we? I don't know. They're still second-class citizens, maybe. They just didn't know. And so there wasn't enough of a precedent set, and Brigham Young was just trying to, I mean, he was putting out fires, right? He had a lot of things to mess with. And so the heading is just like, we're not sure why. And then in 1978, it came back. And so, you know, it's not, it wasn't anything, like, it's not like it was malicious. It was just, we were trying to piece together what was happening.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because a lot of people have seen the new heading and feel like, it, and are kind of crying foul, as if, because it says that there is no understanding or link or this or that. And some people have called back to many statements by the Brethren in the past that, that you know, have given clear reasons why.
No, but there's distinctly a gap from Brigham Young to anybody making a statement on it, right? It's not like Lorenzo Snow is like, yeah, blacks in the priesthood, we made a good call on that one, eh, fellas? You know, it's like Bruce R. McConkie, or you know, it jumps to like a more racist generation. Well, I don't know if it's more racist, but I mean, there's enough gap there where people all of a sudden start to think that it's a de facto. Right. This is the way the church is run, rather than you know back in the day where they were just piecing it together. So I think it's actually really meaningful, and it's good to get a head nod towards like, yeah. You know, maybe this was a mistake. We just didn't know.
Yeah. And I think this is fascinating. Some other changes, I'm just going to work through them. An interesting one is they kind of put, as it's described, an implicit recognition that there's no actual relationship necessarily between the Book of Abraham and the Joseph Smith papyri. That's been worked into the introduction of the Pearl of Great Price, because it's to potentially, what, draw the line and say Joseph Smith had papyri and the Book of Abraham was just revealed to him in a completely different way.
Well, here's the trouble with – well, not the trouble, but here's the story on the Book of Abraham. Is the Book of Abraham was one that – like the papyri that remained, right, is just standard Egyptian – like it's stuff that we've seen a bunch of times. And the Book of Abraham is not written in that, the stuff that remains, right? Not all of it remains. Mm-hmm. And so the stance for a defender is either – you know, you Egyptologists don't know what you mean or don't know what you're talking about, or you Egyptologists don't understand the multiple levels of meaning that maybe the hieroglyphs have, which is just kind of silly. But, I mean, the real, like, from what I can tell and from the way that the wording has changed in this is the same way that the Book of Genesis or the Book of Moses was derived out of the first chapter of Genesis, right? Like, you read it and he was inspired with a revelation of Moses, right? He saw more in there than what was actually there and wrote it down, and that became, you know, multiple chapters of a Book of Moses. That's where it came from. Well, so something similar would be my suggestion for how we got the Book of Abraham, where he was reading through this stuff and started connecting dots and received a revelation around it. Now, so it wouldn't be fair to treat it as a direct revelation, but it, for a long time, that's all we've seen it as, and we said, yeah, this is a revelation of that, and here's what remains, and what remains didn't jive with it, but they're just saying that the Book of Abraham now is inspired by the papyri,
which is different.
I look at the papyri, like the drawings, and I like, there's meaning to them. I took a class on it in college, and you know, there's cool stuff in there, but like, enough to canonize it? I don't know. I mean, it feels pretty straightforward, but I guess it's interesting enough.
Yeah.
It's the only thing kids have to look at in the entire scriptures.
Well, that's also different. One of the other things they included is they've updated many maps and images and stuff like that, like for all the editions, but particularly for the print editions when those finally come out. So that's interesting. And, the church had a release about all the other things for the print edition, like the colors of leather that will be available.
Yeah. Now, what about the King James Version of the Bible, Jeff?
Minor things here. The old archaic spellings have been replaced with up-to-date spellings. They've added a lot of Joseph Smith translation footnotes to the Bible, which is
awesome. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
I wonder. Well, because these are new JST things that are coming, because the RLDS Church for a long time has held that. And supposedly we could have added these in at any time, but they just like it was formatting issues and things like that.
Yeah.
So then, these are new insights that'll be available.
Yeah, and likewise, a few verses not included in the appendix for the Joseph Smith translation have been added. But of course, that is, you know, as you say, it's far from complete.
Now, here's my question on the King James Version: Why fix some of the spelling and stuff on it? Why not go to a new translation?
Well, I think, well, because translation's one thing. They're just changing spellings, mate, to for easier reading.
Well, because we know the King James Version isn't, like, it's not the most perfect. It's just, it's a very widely used, but it's not the most accurate translation.
Well, we regard it as the most accurate translation. That's why we use it.
But it's not.
Says
who,
you.
Who regards it as that?
I believe that's like official church policy. Otherwise, we probably use like the New World Translation or something like that.
I'd be curious to see if that's true because I couldn't imagine the church's stance is that it's the most correct. Because I mean,
that's always been what they've said. I mean, I don't think they say it's perfect, but they regard it as the most correct and the least corrupted of those that are those translations which are available.
The least corrupted?
I would argue that. Sure.
Why would it be the? I mean, I'm just being an antagonist, but like, I think that's not a very accurate statement.
Well, and I think that you're not a very accurate statement.
Well, because we know, like, I mean, this was the translation was done when back in the 1600s, right? Is it wasn't it 1610? Let me pull out my Bible and look.
Sure, look at your scriptures.
I'll look at it.
Look at them. Learn from them.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Learn the word.
Yeah, well, so it was either like, yeah, I believe it was the 1600s that was translated, 1610-ish, right. And so I mean, just with the tools and the knowledge of the language and stuff that we have now, don't you think that just with a computer we could render a better translation of the original text that this is taken from than a bunch of English scribes that were also learned in another language that are trying to piece it together as best they can?
There is something to say for that. I am surprised the church has never put forth an effort to provide its own translation. Not an annotated King James Version, but just a straight-up LDS version of the Bible. That'd be a huge undertaking, but...
I mean, obviously there's the Joseph Smith... Joseph Smith had revelations and would teach... principles based around like specific wording in King James verses, and so like if we left that translation, we'd lose some of that significance because that's what he had when he was teaching at the time.
It's true, and I also think that I think another reason we couldn't go for our own new translation of the Bible would be because we have Joseph Smith's translations, and obviously we would regard those as correct in any circumstance. So what are we going to do? Just try to do the rest of the verses that he didn't do and plug it all together? You know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, we would never do our own translation of it, but like there's good, like much better translations out there.
Well, you write a letter to the boys upstairs.
I'm just curious. I just wanted to spin through it.
Just a couple other things that you might have heard that they adjusted the typesetting in the Book of Mormon so that study things, footnotes and chapter headings, stuff like that, and original text don't match up. So they're going to use the same text in the verses, but the other parts will use a different typeface so as not to be confusing, I guess.
Oh, really? Like yeah. Footnotes will be in Comic Sans?
I am pulling for Calibri. It's finally going to happen.
Come on, Georgia!
And then some other random errors, some spelling errors that are going to be fixed. They mentioned that none of Royal Skousen's discoveries have been incorporated, though. Also, of course, the introduction...
What were those?
I don't know. I'm not smart.
Royal Skousen's discoveries? What does that mean?
Well, you know, there was a treasure and a map, and it was underneath that church in New York City.
You're thinking of Nicolas Cage.
Dang it.
In The Lost Symbols, the famous book by Dan Brown.
Oh, you mean that movie that stars Tom Hanks?
No, I was being facetious.
Oh my gosh. We're all over this. I do not know. You can look it up. And also, the introduction to the Doctrine and Covenants has also been expanded. And interestingly, many section headings of the Doctrine and Covenants that had anything that cross-referenced history of the church, all cross-references to the history of the church have been removed entirely.
Yeah.
Which is somewhat funny and ironic in the year that we are studying Doctrine and Covenants and history of the church in gospel doctrine.
Again, it's trying to take away the idea that it was a verbatim quote out of Joseph Smith.
I'm sure that, but that's the same thing. If you read the history of the church, that actually explains that better. It explains, you know, a lot of these things. It explains the history and the circumstances surrounding these things. But maybe it was redundant with the new wording to also provide that reference.
Может быть.
It's pretty cool, though. They have not. These are all kind of minor tweaks to the scriptures, but it is the first time they've done anything since 1981.
Yeah.
To alter them at all. So
I love that some of the spelling has gone away, though, because that was like, I'm one of those guys where if I read a typo in a book at Barnes & Noble I'm perusing, I'll pull out my pen and fix it. Like, it just irritates me.
Yeah, I write, when I find typos in books that I sometimes send emails to the publisher.
Really?
If it's bad enough, no, they never respond, but you're like, guy, come on. Every now and then people do respond and they feel, you know, they appreciate it. One time I was at Wendy's and there's a real story here. So Wendy's often has these TV screens and they play, you know, kind of like one of these weird made for when or third party informational, entertaining, whatever, and Wendy's plays them. They did a segment on Roy on the history of the Walt Disney Company, of which I am, you know, well versed. And they showed and talked about Walt's brother Roy succeeding him as president of the company. But the picture they showed was of Roy E. Disney, not Roy O. Disney. It was Roy Disney's son, who was Walt Disney's nephew. So I wrote them a letter explaining this and a few other things that were a little factually inaccurate. And they actually wrote me back and let me know that they were working on a new draft to fix the video. I was impressed. I mean, I was going out of my way because I was bored.
You're such a nerd. You are such a nerd.
I was just bored. And my wife's probably listening to this and questioning some decisions she's made with her life. But that's okay. I love you, honey. Glad you're here.
Baby, come back.
Oh, yeah. So some other news, I guess. So I guess we can move on from scriptures, unless you have anything else.
No.
You want to talk about there? So lactivists, everyone. I don't know if you've heard.
Is that like lactating? Is that different?
It's like lactation activists.
Oh, so breastfeeding people.
That's the one, but I call them lactivists.
I was right. That really is a breastfeeding in LDS Church. Creates controversy. Great.
Yeah, so I guess what happened here, this is a weird, it's an article in Feminist Mormon Housewives.
Please, please, Jeff, can we have a breastfeeding day at church where all women breastfeed in unison?
It's the new wear your pants to church day. Breastfeed your children at church. So apparently what happened, this person wrote, a dear friend of mine is going to be released from her young women's calling. And this person alleges that her temple recommend is in question because she was openly breastfeeding at church. She wasn't covering up. She wasn't going to another room. She was just, you know, pulling out her boob and providing life to her child.
Is that so wrong?
Well, that is the question. Now, I really question whether one would lose one's temple recommend for this. I could understand people regarding it as immodest, and I don't even think that would be Mormon culture, really. Generally, in American culture, we frown upon exposed breastfeeding, I feel like.
Yeah, you need a blanket. That's the thing.
I think you either need a blanket or you go to a different room. I don't think that, and they're calling this, of course, a call to action. Like, we need to submit stuff and save these people and blah, blah, blah. I can't imagine anyone actually losing a recommend for doing that. But I could understand many people being uncomfortable if you're sitting in sacrament meeting and a woman's boob is just hanging out while she's taking care of her child. I mean, it's wonderful that you are taking care of your child. Don't get that wrong. I don't think this is like a new batch of Mormon feminism that we don't need. I don't know.
Do we know what happened?
That is what happened. But of course, I mean, the post itself is reasonably short because she was told that, of course, if she does not comply with covering up, she is not sustaining her leaders, and her recommend could be at risk.
The comment says, this is so being made up. There's no way in heck she's going to lose a calling. Oh my gosh, Utah, you fascinate me.
Yeah, and all of this, of course, they're hoping to get to Scott Trotter, the LDS spokesperson. And to get like, this feels like these things on the White House website when you can get official petitions signed. So what is this? If we get enough official signatures that like the first presidency is required to respond to it when we cross a certain
threshold? Trotter said, countless thousands of mothers have been accommodated in church for generations simply by everyone observing common sense, discretion, and respect. We have received no information about this incident.
Yeah, so maybe it's just stirring the pot for no reason.
Lactation people.
Yeah, I think it's stupid. Like, honestly.
Jeff, will you breastfeed your children? Is this a personal issue or is this a church issue? I don't know.
Well, I hope I will not be breastfeeding my children. I do not make milk, to my knowledge.
But would you if you did have milk?
I would love to experience all the
I love my life. This is great.
But my official stance, and I don't, Al, you can tell me what yours is, but I say no to the exposed breastfeeding in the public scenario setting. If you support me in this, then we can take an official twin position.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. Sure. Let's do it.
So. Okay. Well, twim, we officially denounce this. Go be modest, and no one wants to see that. Put that away.
But we do encourage breastfeeding because it makes babies 6'7" and 250 pounds.
Oh, you put on 10 pounds, huh?
Yeah, I've been working out.
Oh, it's muscle. Sure. 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 Sure.
It really is. It uh-huh. really is.
Right, right, right. Oh, okay.
So, okay. Jeff, wait, what's this? Mormons are in Fallout 3?
Okay, this, I don't even know how I found this. So, I've never played the Fallout games. I don't know if you have.
I played Fallout 1.
I believe, what is the storyline typically involving? Some sort of post-apocalyptic whatever?
I don't remember. I grew up too fast.
So apparently in Fallout 3, there is a heavy influence of Mormonness because the whole thing takes place kind of in the Great Basin and in the Mojave Desert. And this is a, oh my gosh, look who it's by. This can't be the same one, right? It's by Skip Cameron.
From Salt Lake City.
Do you think
of
it could
course
possibly
it's
be,
our boy Skip.
Could it, do you think it could be our boy Skip? Was his last name Cameron?
I hope it is.
Nothing yields it. If I type Skip Cameron into a Google image search, I get pictures of people encouraging other people not to vote to re-elect David Cameron, the Premier of England.
Neither should you.
That doesn't really work. Anyway, it was actually an interesting read for me about how there's a bunch of Mormon stuff in the latest Fallout game, but impressively, the studio that made the game gets it right. Like, they don't portray the Mormon characters as religious fanatics or the weird ones. Like, in this case, there's a lot of prodigal son elements and accepting good religious societies and stuff. I just think it's fascinating that that it's all there together.
They've got a Mormon missionary from New Canaan, or post-apocalyptic Ogden.
Yeah, exactly. See, post-apocalyptic Ogden, you got burned people, and, like, some people, there's references to trying to, like, reactivate church-wise, someone's buddy, and this is apparently just all over this game, and I've never played it, but...
Well, it's not all over. You kind of got to go looking for it, but still interesting.
This feels to me like major, major characters in this game.
It's not.
Are you sure? More importantly, I'm really wondering if Skip Cameron is Skippy from, you know, Skippy.
Yeah, that's what I thought that's what you were looking up.
Well, I didn't want to make the listeners wait while I tried to find it. Maybe let's see here. I think his name's Jessup.
Skippy Jessup?
Well, you know what his... Let's see here. I'm not completely sure. Do you have criticism? Watch. His name is Skippy Jessup. This is a different Skip, because it seemed to fit the mold pretty well. I mean, it's
Jeff,
30...
it's called a moniker.
Well, that's true, because, I mean, 31... I don't remember if Skippy was 31. Maybe... I think he was actually 34, wasn't he?
And, I don't know. All I know is he gives t-shirts away to women who make out with him.
And it would make sense if he's a video game nerd who's never outgrown them, living in his parents' basement. I mean, sorry, not nerds. Creative people. Wonderful humans. Daughters.
Jeff, we can be nerds.
Okay, fair enough. So anyways, I just think it's hilarious that this game apparently is full of Mormon references.
It's not full of Mormon references.
Full of them. The entire game is actually called Mormons 3.
That's simply not true.
I have it on good authority that was the original working title for the game until they decided that they should, you know, stick with the series for the sake
You're
of
wrong, Jeff.
Brand recognition.
You're wrong. So Elder Holland dedicated the chapel over in the Middle East that we talked about last time?
Yep. Got dedicated over this past weekend.
Good for him. Good for them. So we talked about that last time, but it's done.
Well, it's cool because we didn't have a lot of information specifically about the meeting house, but now there it is. Done, dedicated, signed, sealed, delivered. It's yours.
Ba-da! Oh, Jeff, you're so witty with these 1950s Motown references.
I'm kind of on fire tonight. It must be the Danish water or all the alcohol I've probably been...
You're Reaganing. You're Reaganing right now.
Reaganing.
You can do no wrong.
Yeah. Anyway, it's great news. Elder Holland went out there, dedicated it. They also did it via satellite. Blah, 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 blah.
Wait, they dedicated it via satellite?
Well, they did a whole thing because the stakes there are really spread out. So there were only about under 500 people in attendance at the meeting. About 640 watched on a webcast. And other ones watched on the on the internet.
If this I wonder if available. It was like a Google Hangout. And old Jessup was putting doggy ears on Holland as a joke. I was like, oh.
Talking about Skippy? Him.
No, who's the... Oh, Trotter. Never mind. I borked my reference.
Ooh, good Bork reference, though.
Thank
you.
So
you borked your reference, but that was a good Bork reference.
Thanks?
Wordplay is all over the place today. Oh, I love this.
Talk to me about Orson Scott Card.
You sure you want to talk? Okay, I was going to talk about LDS charities. We can talk about Orson Scott Card if you want. So
I'm just curious what this is.
Well, yeah, this was... where'd you put Orson Scott Card? There it is. So, random website, if it comes up. Orson Scott Card apparently has had quite the... He's made many statements about homosexuality in the past.
What
not
has
exactly
he said?
Friendly stuff. Pretty... Just harsh things. I'm trying to remember. I don't have any of the exact quotes on me here. I'm trying to see if I can find one of them. But he's been decidedly, you know, in the church's Prop 8 camp, but even farther, you know, really questioning the goodness of all of that business. Actually, he even wrote a Sunstone article in 1990 called The Hypocrites of Homosexuality.
Yeah, I think that was a confusing time for everyone. I wouldn't hold that against him. What's his problem now?
Oh, well, anyways, the point is, what the real problem is, they're questioning whether how this will make a difficult path for him. Because Ender's Game, of course, the film, is coming out here.
Oh, yeah.
In November. And people are questioning whether Orson Scott Card is going to be barred from doing publicity for it and stuff like that, or going to Comic-Con to promote it. Because of the inevitable very quick questions that'll come from what is largely an open-minded liberal, and there is a substantial gay population in sort of the sci-fi and comic book realm, and just supporters of those wonderful people who will question him and turn everything into an issue about Orson Scott Card's view of gays. So basically, is he a liability for his own product at this point?
Really? Like, he's that much of a hot hand?
I don't think he himself is a hot hand, but I could see this being like anything else when you bring all these people up to promote a movie. Hey, this is the guy who wrote Ender's Game, Orson Scott Card, and a lot of people also view him as, yeah, and like noted bigot Orson Scott Card. And when given the chance to approach him with questions, you could see the passionate about their anger against him being the ones who would go out of their way to cause a bit of a ruckus so that there could be a kerfuffle after some rigmarole.
Yeah, man.
So there's a very lengthy post here. It's on the extremely generic-looking WordPress page called MormonLetters.org, blog.mormonletters.org. I mean, they use the WordPress template. But it's actually very well-researched and lengthy post kind of going into all the history of this, and I recommend giving it a read. He also wrote an article in 2004 called Homosexual Marriage and Civilization.
I still don't understand what this is getting at, though. Like, is this?
It's talking about the fact that
they're just mad that he has a history of being.
Yeah, this blog is not mad, but they're questioning whether his actions and the things he said about
because
gays
wasn't well. And correct me if I'm wrong, but like until like maybe I don't know 88, 89, that was kind of the norm, wasn't it? Like. Everybody was just like, oh, yeah, they're not real people, blah, blah, blah.
They're fake people.
Well, but, like, I'm being genuine here, though, because we grew up, I mean, I was high school was, like, 2000 for me, or late 90s, and that had kind of shifted, but you could still see, like, your parents had been taught a different thing, and they, like, as they were coming around and understanding more about what makes a person gay or why a person is gay and all that stuff. I mean, then opinions and views changed, right? And so is the problem that Orson Scott Card has not changed? Does he still hold these same views, or are they just mad that he has a history of this?
I think it's both. I don't think there's anything on the record that he's changed, that he's, you know, redacted anything. And really, this isn't as much. This article itself isn't ripping on Orson Scott Card. It's more going into the history of the things that he has said and written about these issues, and the fact that those who are angry at him because of his statements and stances on these things will have this chance to publicize this their anger. This could be a big embarrassment.
So he gives a quote
involved.
And he says, my goal then and today remains the same, this is Orson Scott Card, to create believable characters and help readers understand them as people. Ordinarily, I would have included gay characters, which he did in a few books, in their normal proportions among the characters in my story. However, since I have become a target of vilification by the hate groups of the left, I'm increasingly reluctant to have any gay characters in my fiction because I know that no matter how I depict them, I will be accused of homophobia. The result is that my work is distorted by not having gay characters where I would normally have had them, for which I will also, no doubt, be accused of homophobia.
That's a very well said statement, I feel.
He's what we call between a rock and, wait for it,
a don't.
A hard place.
Oh.
Oh, Orson Scott, maybe, I don't know, like maybe release a statement on your views of them
more
now.
More like Orson not.
This isn't a Sherry don't moment, Jeff.
It was going so well. I'm not Reaganing anymore. I'm Cartering.
You had three good and all the rest are bad. And the LDS Charities leader is
this
speaking.
Is a big deal, actually.
Why is it a big deal?
We have never had a seat at the table at a UN conference about humanitarian stuff.
We, the largest humanitarian provider in the world?
Sort of. We've not kind of been like, we're huge, but you know how we are. We keep to ourselves for the most part. But there will be a discussion at the UN conference led by Sharon Eubank, who is the first woman to serve as executive director of LDS Charities. Incidentally,
that's Sharon Dew's sister.
No, it's Sharon Eubank. Eubank! Anyway, I think it's great. We're kind of leading a discussion and taking a very, very active role at this UN conference. And I think before we've kind of gone about our business and not tried to draw attention to ourselves, but now we are embracing.
We're saying, hey, publicity is publicity. Just don't spell my name wrong. Hey-o!
And, you know, and I myself, I work in international development, so I'm excited about this and seeing the church getting a bit more of a prominent role and really running the show here. I think it's good.
When I was a missionary, we used to have towns like the reporters in towns and stuff that we'd go and do humanitarian aid stuff in. They'd be like, "You just gave tens of thousands of dollars in medical equipment. Why? Like, and you guys, we couldn't even write about you in the paper because we didn't know. But then this other organization will come in and donate like $500 to something." Right. And we write a big paper. Why don't you tell us more about this stuff so that we can write about it and like give you some press? And I mean, it was one of those things where you're constantly divided because you're supposed to do your alms in secret, right?
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. I mean, this goes back to what we've talked about in the past, like even Mormon Helping Hands. Like, are we supposed to be doing things in secret and not drawing attention to it, or should we be wearing our green vests?
Use it as a marketing message
so that we
and
get
let
a marketing
people find
message.
Out. Yeah.
But then we are not doing our alms in secret, and it is still a debate. And I don't
what if we did 50-50, half of it in secret and half of it for the press?
Oh, I thought you meant the vests. Okay.
That I believe that's what a vest is. That's by definition, it's a 50-50 piece of clothing.
Well, take off the back of the vest to make them more like life preservers.
Oh, sounds sexy.
Right? That's what I do. Sexy things. It's who I am.
All right, Jeff. Well, it's been an exciting time.
Thank you. It's been an exciting time with you. I look forward to talking to you when I'm stateside and when my audio doesn't sound so poor. So
next week, will you be home?
Yeah, I'll be around next week.
Jeff, I miss you.
Okay.
And I am so sorry.
Well, you can always fly to DC.
I cannot sleep.
And work out
I cannot dream tonight.
Stay with us. You know that.
Anyway, have a great... Fly safe, Jeff. May your incomings be as your outgoings. May the best of your todays be the worst of your tomorrows.
Thank you. I'm not going to lie. I was wishing
by
the
Jay-Z.
Storm in... A small part of me wishes the storm in D.C. would have been so crazy that I'd fly to Amsterdam, and then they'd tell me, you can't fly till tomorrow, and then I'd just be stuck with a day to play in Amsterdam. But I don't think that's...
But instead, you got to go see your wife.
Yeah, but I do kind of miss her. We're a little over the halfway point right now.
So. Wah.
Don't wah. When you get married, you'll realize you can't even breathe without the other person.
It's like that Whitney Houston anthem.
I can't live.
All right. Have a great Hey, you can find us, email us, contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Find us on the web, thisweekinmormons.com, or on the Facebook at facebook.com/thisweekinmormons.
And at The Real Twim on Twitter. And, of course, find us on YouTube. We've been getting many more subscribers on YouTube. Find us
many more
at TWI Twim Mormons. So Twim Ormons, however you want to view that. I didn't make up the channel name on that one. Al did.
This Week in Mormons. That's what it is.
That's what it is. Find us on there, though. Subscribe to us. And, of course, keep your ears and eyes out for Sunday School Bonanza, where we get you prepared for gospel doctrine.
All right. Have a great week, Jeff.
Thanks, Al. And you too. Look forward to talking to you next week, folks. We appreciate you tuning into This Week in Mormons, and we will join you again next week. Bye-bye.
Your mouth is poor.